Good morning. Welcome to the September 20th, 2023 Board of Directors meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I am going to ask our guest from the Metropolitan Water District, Mr. Louis Centina, would you like to lead us in the flag salute this morning, sir?
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Centina. Look forward to hearing from you a little later this morning. I am going to ask the board secretary if she would be so kind as to read the suggestions for virtual participation, and then take a roll call of the board and legal counsel.
Absolutely. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And please participate from a quiet environment so that the board may hear you when you are speaking. And now we will do roll call. President Pauly?
Present.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Our legal counsel is present. And just to note, Director Record is absent.
Thank you very much. April, do we have anybody who wants to do a public comment on any item not on the agenda this morning?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you very much for that. We will now go on to executive reports, and we will start with Laura.
Nothing today.
Very good. Nick?
I have no report today.
Good morning. No report from me either.
All right. Matt?
I have my usual groundwater recharge report. We're at about 3,240 acre feet of pre-deliveries for 2024. And so far this year, we're just over 10,000 acre feet in total. So still doing well.
Very good. Appreciate that. That will bring us to item 3, which is our consent calendar this morning. Do any members of the board wish to pull an item for separate vote or separate discussion? I do. I would like to take item C and have a staff report on that item, but I will then look for a motion and a second on the rest of the consent calendar. A motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote on that, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Item C, I would like to ask for a staff report from either Pakal or, and I understand we have a guest on the line.
Right. So good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. By way of background, Nimala Pappas and Associates has represented EMWD's legislative interests in Sacramento now since 2019. We've had the pleasure of working with Aaron Nimala, who is a partner with the firm, and Jamie Miner, who is a legislative advocate with NPA. And we have them online with us this morning. They've done great work for EMWD. They ensure that EMWD has a great reputation and visibility in Sacramento. And their expertise has allowed us also to ensure that we maintain and build strong and productive relationships with members of the legislature, their staff, regulators, and other key decision makers in Sacramento. So with that being said, I'd like to hand it over to the NPA team. They'll provide a sort of a summary of activities in Sacramento, and they'll say a few words.
Very good. Good morning from Sacramento.
Good morning. We're happy to be with you this morning. Thank you very much for having us. Eric Nimala, I'm a partner with Nimala Pappas and Associates, and it's our honor and pleasure to represent Eastern. You're viewed as one of the authorities among water districts in Sacramento. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Jamie Miner, who is a principal with the firm, to provide a little report this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Just want to echo Aaron's comments that, you know, again, I think a lot of legislative offices look to Eastern and your leadership and kind of your innovation and thinking about certain policy issues, just very well respected. And we, you know, we understand the team has grown this year too, which is also very exciting and just a pleasure to work with you. But as far as what's happening up here, last week they adjourned, the legislature adjourned for the first year of a two-year session. It was a pretty anticlimactic ending. You know, ever since we've had this 72-hour bill and print rule, some of these last-minute deals that we used to see don't really come together in the same way because it's hard to negotiate when you can't change a bill, right? So overall, there were over 2,600 bills introduced this session, and about 1,100 made it to the governor's desk. So still significant amount of legislation. For bills that we were watching very closely, I'll start with AB 399, which is by Assemblywoman Verner from the San Diego region, which I know you guys have been updated on frequently. Sponsored by the city of San Diego, it was a gut and amend bill later in the session to address, you know, particular districts leaving the San Diego County Water Authority. The bill did end up passing the legislature barely, but with one key change, which took out the urgency of the bill. So it won't go into effect immediately. That's what the urgency would have done via a two-thirds vote. They weren't able to get that threshold, so it won't take effect until January 2024. So any sort of election that's happening in November essentially will be untouched by the impacts of this bill. So that was the first big update. And then, there were two conservation bills that Eastern was really actively working on and providing feedback on and taking positions on. The first was AB 1572 by Assemblywoman Friedman. She's no stranger to conservation legislation. This bill would have prohibited it does prohibit the use of potable water to irrigate non-functional turf. So since you all are such a leader in this issue area, we took a support amended position. A lot of our concerns were ironed out, and in the end, we're able to support the inclusion of multifamily housing in particular was taken out of the bill. So actually, a lot of agencies ended up being okay with the bill. And then another major package that we were working on was the climate bonds. Climate resilient bonds, which would have given about $5 billion to water projects that we could have benefited from, similar to Proposition 1 from a number of years ago that we've been able to get financing from to build projects. This was shelved for the year just because there were a lot of bonds that the legislature was considering. This didn't rise to the top for the administration, but the legislature stands firm that they want a climate resilience bond going on in the November 2024 ballot. So we will be very active working with our delegation over the interim, making sure that some of the projects that we invest in, like water recycling, groundwater cleanup, et cetera, will be, one of the prioritized pots within the bond. So those are a few of the big updates we wanted to share with you. But again, we'll see what the governor does. He has a lot of bills on his desk that he's wading through, as he's at the UN right now talking about climate issues. So many updates to come, and we'll definitely report back when we have the final summary for what's happened and what's becoming law.
All right. Thank you very much. And did the board have any questions for our Sacramento representatives? Thank you for what you do for the district up there. And with that, I will make a motion on item C of the consent calendar.
Second.
Director Armstrong would like to second that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you very much for that. That will take us to item 4 this morning, which is our action calendar. Item 4A is to approve and authorize two one-year agreements and up to 4 one-year renewals for the purchase and supply of water meters and punctuators with Aquametic Sales Company and HydroPro Solutions in the combined full term not to exceed $9.5 million. Mr. Wasserman, the floor is yours.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Before again begin, I'd like to introduce John Schaefer with Aquametric.
Thank you for being here this morning, sir.
And so just by way of background, the district purchases water meters in size from 5/8 inch to 10 inches to support new connections, repairs, and replacements. The meters are used in residential, commercial, and agricultural applications in combination with the district's automated metering infrastructure, AMI, system. There are approximately 3,000 to 4,000 new water connections installed each year, along with those required for repair and replacement, with about 170,000 meters in operation. So AMI systems consist of three main components. There's the base stations, or the antenna receivers, transmitter devices, or MXUs, and then the water meter itself. EMWD's metering infrastructure, including all hardware and related technology, is manufactured by Sensus, who's a global leader in metering and AMI applications. Starting in 2012, EMWD standardized to Master Meter brand water meters to support district operations. Master Meter meters are compatible with Sensus technology. However, staff have experienced issues over the past few years with the adapter connection manufactured by Master Meter and then the MXU transmitter, which is produced by Sensus. So beginning in 2022, staff conducted a performance and cost assessment of water meters ranging from 5/8 inch to 2 inches. And results showed that the Sensus brand product, which matches EMWD's AMI technology, worked well. It offered compatibility with MXU transmitters and was less costly. In addition, the performance improvements were identified by aligning the Sensus AMI system with its own metering products. So the recommended transition to Sensus EMWD primary, to Sensus as EMWD's primary meter, is expected to save approximately $580,000 in the first year of the agreement. Staff also recommend a secondary contract for the purchase of Master Meter products, meters. This will allow flexibility to install or replace a particular installation with a Master Meter as field conditions and sometimes may require. Also, an alternative secondary supplier provides redundancy if there are supply chain issues, which we did experience a few years back. So staff anticipate annual spend to increase from about $1.46 million to $1.9 million over the term of this contract due to price increases of the meters themselves from 12% to about 44% and an increase in the repairs and replacements that we've seen. Aquametric Sales Company of Riverside, California, is a designated distributor of Sensus products in California with HydroPro Solutions of Ontario as the authorized supplier for Master Meter. Pricing under both agreements will remain fixed for the first 12 months of the contract and capped at 3%, with subsequent price increases made in accordance with CPI adjustments at the district's discretion. So with that, a recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize 2 one-year agreements and up to 4 one-year renewals with Aquametric Sales Company and HydroPost Solutions for the purchase and supply of meters and accessories in the combined full-term total of $9.5 million. With that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Any questions by board members on this? I just had one, and that is I brought it up in the admin committee. With all the home building going on and continuing to go on in our service area, I always want to make sure that we do not run short of meters. I would never want a home not to be sold or occupied because Eastern was the problem because we didn't have a meter to put in. So we keep enough on hand, or you could elaborate on that, that we will not face that challenge.
Our commonly used meters, the 5/8 inch and 1 inch meters, I verified, we have over 700 5/8 meters on hand and over 1,000 of the 1-inch meters on hand.
And that satisfies the inventory of homes being built, and we kind of monitor that. So, okay.
Yes.
No, perfect. That's just the one concern I have is that we are never the holdup on any kind of building issue. So, because trust me, there's a lot of other holdups in the building industry, but I don't want it to be Eastern. Thank you for the presentation. With that, I'll look for a motion and a second. Motion by Director Slauson.
I'll second.
Second by Director Crona. May I get a roll call vote on that?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you, and thank you, sir, for being here. I appreciate you coming and representing your company. Move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize a one-year agreement and up to 4 one-year renewals with Core and Main Limited Partnership in the full term not to exceed a total of $2.5 million for the purchase and inventory of hydrants and fittings. The floor is yours again.
I've got this one.
From water meters to fire hydrants.
So I want to let the board know that Paul Martinez with Corin Maine is here today.
All right. Thank you, sir, for being here. Appreciate it very much.
So by way of background, in June, we received three bids for hydrants and fittings with Corin Maine Limited Partnership of Paris, providing the lowest cost and most complete response. EMWD's warehouse maintains an inventory of over 3,800 commonly used items, supplies, and materials that support district operations and departments. The inventory includes a variety of fire hydrants and related accessories needed to support ongoing maintenance, repair, and replacement needs. Expenditures for hydrants over the past year have been approximately $433,000, and staff anticipate upcoming usage to be about $490,000. Corin Maine is a leading distributor of waterworks materials and supplies in the U.S., and they have several warehouses in California and a location in Paris to meet our requirements. Corin Maine has been awarded several supply contracts with the district and has proved to be a reliable and cost-effective supplier. They were also previously awarded the District Supplier of the Year. They're recognized as District Supplier of the Year. Under the proposed agreement, pricing will remain fixed for the first year of the recommended term, with adjustments capped at 3% based on supply increases and CPI adjustments, at the district's sole discretion. So at this time, our recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize a one-year agreement and up to four one-year renewals with Corin Maine in the full term not to exceed a total of $2.5 million.
Very good. Any questions on this?
No, looks good.
So, motion by Director Slauson.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you for the presentation. Again, sir, thank you for being here. Appreciate it very much. We'll move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize the West San Jacinto 2024 groundwater monitoring program and appropriation of $870,000.
Good morning, Director Pauly and members of the board. We're going to talk about the West San Jacinto 2024 groundwater monitoring program. Before I get into that, I just want to acknowledge Dr. Ali Tagavi from Woodard and Curran and Dr. Trevor Jones from DUDEC, who support us on a variety of programs related to groundwater, are here in attendance. We'll be talking about the work they'll be doing as part of this effort.
Thank you both for being here today. Appreciate it.
And so the goal today is to talk about the location of the monitoring program, the components, the budget, and then, of course, the recommendation at the end. A brief bit of history that many of you may be aware of, which is the monitoring program started in the 90s as a voluntary program that Eastern took on to monitor groundwater conditions, about 95, and that includes water quality and water levels in wells, as well as estimates of consumptive use. Over the years, some of that data has been delivered to the state in various formats. There's California statewide groundwater elevation monitoring program. There's the well recordation program. And then most recently, with the passing of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act in 2014, the data reporting activities have become much more intense. Move down. So here's the program location. I think what's important about this map, it shows some service areas, but the most important parts of it are the dark blue line and the dashed line to the east. If you were to take the sum of those two, it would be the San Jacinto Groundwater Basin. That's a recognized groundwater basin in DWR's Bulletin 118. The only thing that's a little different than many basins is that we have a non-adjudicated portion on the west and an adjudicated portion on the east. That would be the Hemet-San Jacinto Water Master Area. And so today, for this presentation, we're focusing on the west side. Much of the monitoring program work also is handled on the east side, but that's handled administratively with different budgets and in conjunction with the Water Master. On the west side, we monitor groundwater extractions, groundwater quality, groundwater levels. We also cap inactive or abandoned wells, seal those wells, and then we install meters, repair meters, replace meters. And so those first three bullets are really focused on the field activities. We have staff that are doing this routinely throughout the year. The bottom four are the office-based activities. And so We collect a lot of data that we use for reporting other programs, such as the Paris II desalter or ROTF. We have data management activities. We upload data to the SIGMA portal for DWR, for CASGEM, et cetera. And then we also have an obligation to prepare a SIGMA groundwater sustainability plan annual report. And so that goes in no later than April 1st of every year, and that's part of what we're going to talk about today and part of the work that Dr. Dagavi and Dr. Jones are doing under this effort. And then the last bullet is maybe the most important in terms of our recent approval of our groundwater sustainability plan. There are certain activities that we'll be presenting to the board later that have to occur to keep our plan in a good state and in an acceptable state to DWR. So the very first bullet on this slide has to do with those corrective actions. The approval of the groundwater sustainability plan included 8 pretty modest corrective actions compared to other GSPs throughout the state. What I've heard is that it's pretty rare to have less than 10, which is our case, so that's good news. We do have an obligation to have a 5-year update, and that's the interval at which DWR will determine whether or not we're still responsive and sustainable and that we're maintaining the basin in a sustainable condition. We do that by looking at sustainability indicators. Those are water levels, water quality, things that the state has 6 metrics for whether or not the groundwater basin is sustainable. So the entire annual report and the 5-year update is really geared towards those sustainability indicators. Some newer items we're dealing with are identification of the non-de minimis wells. So those are the wells that are between 2 acre feet per year and 25 acre feet per year. Identification of those, quantification, and making sure we understand where those are in the basin. Implementing the governor's executive order with respect to well permitting, that's an ongoing process, it's evolving, but we have an obligation as the GSA to address that in conjunction with the County of Riverside. And then ongoing data management system updates, stakeholder outreach and engagement, and GSA board activities. So if you were to list all those costs together, they're shown there on that table. Again, some of the first 5 line items are more of the field-based activities. The line items below that tend to be the office-based activities. What's new in this budget would be the second from the bottom, the SIGMA Groundwater Sustainability Plan implementation. We just received that approval of the Groundwater Sustainability Plan in the spring. So our recommendation is execution by the general manager or his designee for continuation of the groundwater monitoring program, execution by the general manager or his designee of the district standard form of contract with both DUDEC and Woodard and Kern to do the support activities that are identified, and then appropriation of $170,000 for the consultant work on the annual plan, and then $701,500 for the balance of the work, which includes those field activities and office activities. And that is my presentation. Any questions?
Any questions on this?
I heard this in committee. Looks good.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Did we? Any of our guests want to add anything this morning? No? Okay. Very good.
I'll move the item.
Moved by Director Corona. Second by Director Slauson. I'll get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for being here and doing the work on behalf of the district. With that, we will move to item 5 this morning, which is our informational items. First, we're going to have a presentation by Mr. Louis Centina from the Metropolitan Water District. I understand Ms. Walsh is going to introduce Mr. Centina. Do we have Jolene?
Good.
There you are. Okay.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. This morning I have the pleasure of introducing Louis Centina, the Principal Government and Regional Affairs Representative in the Legislative Services Section at the Metropolitan Water District. While Louis has been at MET for about 35 years, he was recently selected to represent MET in the Inland Empire. Considering he'll be at many of the same events as you all, we thought it would be a good idea for you to know who he is and understand his role at Met. So in addition to sharing that, he'll also be sharing a brief overview of some Met updates. So with that, Lewis, please take it away.
Thank you so much, Jillian, and it's a pleasure to be here, President Pauly and board members and Director Armstrong. Like you said, I've been around Met for a good number of years. What's interesting is that I used to survey out here when I was in college as a rod and chain man. So it's a full circle, and I live in Rancho Cucamonga, so it's always a pleasure to be closer to home when you have responsibilities. Metropolitan is going through some changes, as you all know, and so is California and the region. And so today I want to provide you a brief update as to who Metropolitan is. Many of you all know that, but it's important to reiterate the message from time to time. And some things that are being discussed at Metropolitan, the Climate Adaptation Master Plan. So if I could have, myself will do this, the next slide. There we go. As you know, Metropolitan is the largest wholesaler in the country, actually in the world, of water supply, and 1,900 employees. And our employees are extremely dedicated to ensuring the principles of MET, which is sustainability, innovation, and strong regional collaboration. As you can see here, over almost 100 years at Metropolitan's existence, and right now one of the key focuses is our pure water facility in Carson, that and hopefully in the near future will be providing water supply to sustain the demands in the region. This is Metropolitan service area. Many of you are very familiar with it. What's key here is to note the amount of member agencies, also the big difference in terms of climate regions. The demands and the concerns of people along the coastline are very different than the demands and concerns where we're at here today. I can tell you that, having been part of a local regional board in Rancho Cucamonga, that reliability is a key factor. And so is resiliency. To others is more, but here reliability is a very important factor. And so I mention that because it's important, right? And our responsibility is making sure that everybody's needs are addressed and we come together collectively with a sound decision that's going to benefit the entire region and move the region forward collectively. As you know, Metropolitan, large wholesaler, 26 member agencies, a number of local retail agencies, 19 million customers. Why do we emphasize this? Because we want you all to know that we recognize all the complexities associated with all these different retail agencies that you have to deal with. You are the ones that have to deal with the general public, and we want to be partners in that, helping you any way we can. But we want you to know that we are aware of that. And we're going to do it. And that's one of the primary reasons why I'm here, because as I move forward and I interact with you, the general public, I look at me as a resource to help you. If there's any information that I can provide for you at MET, please don't hesitate to ask, and I'll be there to help. Even a lot of the programs, which I'll mention as well, and I'll be working with your staff as well in concert. But from a regional perspective, right, we've got issues that we've got to realize from a policy perspective in terms of ensuring reliability for all of our region. And doing that in the sound investments, there's no secret, things are getting more expensive, meaning that our decisions that we make at Metropolitan are going to be a lot wiser in terms of where we put our money, where we put your money to invest, to make sure that we all collectively have continue maintaining the quality of life in Southern California and make it appealing for continued economic growth. Also, we have a collective responsibility to look after the environment from a stewardship and sustainability perspective. At the end, if we all benefit from a region, that's the ultimate goal, that the region itself, the entire region, all six counties that participate in this effort benefit equally. Now, the Climate Adaptation Master Plan is a new effort from a Metropolitan perspective. And what's the intent? And one of the primary things that we want to do is we're here today because we want you to know that we're in concert with you in this process as we move forward. And I'll be coming back and giving you more information and providing your staff with more information as we move along. This is a work in progress. This is a work in progress, and it will be presented to our full board as we move along as well. And so these are the primary pillars of it. Integrate climate and water resource planning with financial plans, as I said before. Camp for Water strengthens resiliency, reliability of Metropolitan and member agencies. And Stronger Together, focus on reliability, resiliency, financial sustainability, affordability, and equity. We've got to do this collectively. Like I said before, if the region is going to be sustained and draw and maintain the quality of life that we have today. These are some of the objectives in terms of what we're how we're looking at this effort from a climate mitigation perspective and a climate adaptation perspective. And if you can see in the middle, there are some immediate projects that we can look at and we can all agree that need to be done, like the replace and refurbishment of our pumps along the Colorado River Aqueduct. We're getting more use out of the Colorado River Aqueduct. Surely it was a last drought. That's what sustained us. What would we be without that system? Where would we be here today? What would we be today without DVL that's nearby, right? I worked on that project at Metropolitan years ago, and I often ask myself, where would Southern California be if we did not have DVL during this major drought that we just experienced? So as we move along, we will be working on some of these specific objectives, and I'll be bringing for you the details and the specifics on each one. And this is a outline of some of the goals on an annual basis that we're hoping to implement and realize as we move forward. And you see that one of the last bullet is prepare for first-year progress report to the board. So we're going to make sure that the board is engaged. And as we go along in this process, we're also going to make sure that all our member agencies and our staff are part of the process. But again, what's important is that we remind everyone and we continue to interact with the communities that we're working with. And these are just some of the programs that we're going to continue working on. And you have taken advantage of them. You've been great partners in the community partnering program, the educational outreach programs, advertising and outreach campaigns in both English and Spanish and many other languages that we have. We want to be a resource to our member agencies in partnership with them to meet their needs. And these programs will continue. In addition to that, we want you to know, and you know you've taken advantage of it and so many other member agencies as well, we realize that we've got to give back into our communities from a business perspective, and we do a lot to help out the local small businesses and specifically disabled veterans who have given so much to our nation. And so these programs are in existence, and I look forward to promoting these programs and providing opportunity in our area with our business outreach people as well. And we recently executed a project labor agreement with the intent of expediting some of these projects that need to get done, some inner ties to ensure that we can move Colorado River water into state water project exclusive areas and other areas as well. That's the intent here. We want to be able to put these projects into effect and do it quickly. Time is money. And so the longer these projects are on hold, the increased costs to the materials of these projects take effect. And then we realize that the general public, right now, they're looking at every dollar. And so this is something that we look at as a process to streamline the overall effort. And our residential commercial rebate programs are still active, and we're going to continue promoting these in our communities as we move along. And a lot of this is being active in the turf replacement program. Eastern has been a champion of that, along with Director Record, who is not present today here today. And so these programs are still ongoing, and I hope to be able to help and promote these programs as we had in the past. And that's it. I'll take any questions, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you for being here. I'm going to start. As you know, Director Armstrong represents Eastern on the Met Board, so I will start with him for any questions.
I don't have any questions. Just I want to thank you for coming out here, and you did a good job of condensing and being concise on the Camp for Water process, which is so complex, and I think it's really the biggest really priority and issue that the board is very involved with at Metropolitan, and seems like everything that Metropolitan is doing right now relates back to that Camp for Water process. So it's a monster of an effort, and look forward to see what comes out of it. But it's very nice of you to come out here and speak with us this morning.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I thought your presentation was very informative, and I appreciate you coming out. I especially appreciate that you were a Chayman and a Rodman.
I was also known as the mule, you know, who carried everything.
Yeah. Carrying everything.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for coming out, too. It's always great when Metropolitan folks come out. What was the last one that came out? It was dire and terrible prior to this last winter, and so, I mean, he wasn't terrible, but the outlook was terrible. But you know, things are looking a lot better now, and really appreciate you coming out.
Thank you, Director.
No, appreciate you being here. I just had a couple of comments. One is us in the Southwest Riverside County water world recognized a couple years ago, especially after during the last drought period where we had a zero allocation off the state water project through Director Armstrong and my efforts. For the local water agencies here have gotten together to look at what we can do to build our own water portfolio here. We always recognize we're always going to be part of MET. MET is an important part of Southern California water importation, but we also recognizing that in the fastest growing service area of California, which is where we're at currently, we have to look at some other things that we're doing. So we're exploring some other options right now to be part of that. But I was wondering if you could touch on, you know, historical MET has been the water importer for Southern California, and what might be out there with new supplies of imported water. I know we have stresses on the Colorado River. Thank goodness the Northern California water supply and snowpack seems to be getting back to normal, but there probably is no new normal. So what are some of the things that MET is looking at long term?
Well, long term, you know, the philosophy at MET always been that if we can alleviate demands in a certain part of the service area, it allows us to provide greater service in another part, greater reliability, I should say, right? So one of the projects that MET is looking at is the pure water facility out in Carson. And we've been successful through legislation to streamline that process to bring it to fruition sooner than later. It's still looking at 2030, 2028 time frame right there, and there's some federal funding and some state funding that we secured some state funding for it, and we're on the process of trying to secure some federal funding as well. That's another one project that we're looking at. Also, we're looking at better interties so that we can move water, Colorado River water, to state water areas and vice versa. What was amazing, and I referenced DVL, people in Sylmar were drinking DVL water during the drought. We were able to move water from DVL out to Sylmar, and that was something that we had never done. In addition to that, I know that from a regional perspective, there's also intents of being able to connect the Colorado River in northern Inland Empire, primarily San Bernardino area, to get some water to those folks. And so that's a work in progress from the discussion. Now, I will tell you from a policy perspective, if the conveyance facility up in the Sacramento Delta and Sites Reservoir is still part of our MET policy in terms of promoting it. It is something that's still on the books and we're trying to realize. Those are some of the things that from a long-term perspective that we hope to continue to put into place. In the short term, it's really looking at building up some of the inner ties to ensure the reliability and the flexibility in the system so that we can we don't have to relive what we just did in the last drought or certain areas or had to have higher restrictions than others, and so we're trying to make sure that we can move water quickly within the entire six-county area.
Very good. What's the
potential quantity of water from pure water, you know, ultimately? Do you know?
Oh, I will get back with you on that one. I should know it from the top of my head now because I've said it many times before, but it's in the millions of gallons, and it's but I will get that for you back, okay? Yeah.
Anybody know? Director Armstrong, I think it's 150 million gallons per day for that initial phase.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of water.
Yeah. But I think that's full scale, right? That's full scale, long-term first scale. Yeah.
Dr. Corona?
Yeah. I have a non-water question. Do you live in Rancho Cucamonga, or did you grow up there in Cucamonga?
I grew up in Pasadena.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I live in Rancho. Yeah.
He is a member of the Rancho Cucamonga Valley Water
District. I was.
You were.
Yeah,
were.
I were for 10 years.
I grew up in Cucamonga.
Did you?
Back before it was Rancho Cucamonga. It was just Cucamonga, Altalonga, and Etowanda.
So, a lot of water history.
I went to Altalonga and all that stuff.
I will just say I've known Mr. Santina away from the MET job for a while. I think we're going to be very lucky to have him out here. Representing MET and being part of the community out here. So welcome to Southwest Riverside County under your new job duties, and I do appreciate you being here this morning.
Likewise. Thank you, Director Pauly.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. All right. We will go on to informational item B, which is fiscal operating and capital highlights for the fourth quarter. I'm sorry, Mr. Adams.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. So this morning, I'm providing, along with the assistance of Linnea, an update on our fourth quarter performance for last fiscal year 2022-2023. Report really on the preliminary results. We just completed audit and should have financial statements out in November, with, you know, really confirming the performance I'm going to cover today. So let me just jump into my... So as normal, the outline for the presentation today, I'll provide really a high-level overview of the consolidated enterprise results, go into a little more detail within the three service areas. I'll turn over to Linnea to really highlight a lot of major accomplishments this past year in our capital improvement program, and then provide a quick summary. So jumping in, and really because of the bullets, wanted to separate this from the normal schedule that we show. But overall, revenues did exceed budget by over 8%, while expenses were below. But you really need to dive into the details to really identify certain areas that were positive and certain that were not as positive. So operating revenues, 2.3% below projections. This is really due based on lower water sales. Also, operating expenses were lower, 7.2%. With the lower water sales, we had less purchases from Met. And when I show you the details, you'll see those variances. Areas that we really were higher, much higher than we anticipated in the budget, connection fees, development is continuing to be very strong. I mean, I even saw August numbers. We are continuing the same pace that we have had locally in this region for the past two years. So you can see there we were 53% higher than our budget. And our budget, just to remind the board, is based on a 10-year rolling average, or $27 million over what the budget was. Other areas, much higher interest income. Certainly we are more than aware that the Fed is meeting today, at least I am aware. We anticipate them to keep rates flat or no increase, but that increase over the last 2 years has benefited us on one side, which is the interest income based on our reserves. So $3 million higher than we originally projected in the budget, which was about 18 months ago. You can see the 350 basis point increase over the past year. And then late fees, you know, when we resume late fees, I guess it was about 18 months, actually probably closer to 2 years now. Late fees this past year, $7 million, which was $2.3 million higher than budget. This is very comparable to prior to the pandemic when we actually had late fees. So late fees ranged in that $7 million range. So really returning to prior year actuals prior to the pandemic. Overall, net operating income, $121 million to support capital. This was lower than prior year, but still above our budget based on revenues exceeding and expenditures being less. And then overall, with the higher net margin, actually had a contribution to reserves, or the change in reserves went up almost $8 million. We actually anticipated a draw on reserves to support the capital and other programs that did not come to fruition. So with that, just jumping in, I know always difficult to see the numbers, but you can see the first line just to show that 8.2% over budget, really driven by non-operating revenues. $35 million higher in revenues, really driven by, again, connection fees, property tax, and interest income. When you look down, net margin, $121 million, 71% higher. We were actually anticipating a draw on reserves and net margin to only be $71 million to support capital. And then you can see the last red box, which is really the contribution or use of reserves. We're actually anticipating a $70 million use of reserves. We actually increased reserves $9 million. Again, really the major driver there was connection fees. And as you all know, connection fees are restricted to really funding development or growth, capital related to development and growth. All right, so jumping into water, actually for water service, I mentioned lower sales and lower purchases. Certainly, you know, we were under budget 6% on what we sold. This is actually 10,000 acre feet less than the prior year. So just to give you a perspective, in the prior year it was 92,000 acre feet. Here it's 82,000 acre feet. Revenues based on the lower budget was under budget. Revenues 5.2%, but operating costs were below. You can see to the right, domestic sales was really what was impacted based on, one, the drought, and then the rainfall, the large rainfall that we had in December through March. Ag water, which is really a result of our sales to Lake Hemet to help them during the drought, those were higher than anticipated, but again, higher than prior years. And then purchase water, 17%. With lower sales, we just purchased less met water. Certainly our water is coming groundwater, both the desalters and non-desalters, but then, any purchases, any additional demands are really coming from treated water. So, again, lower costs there. And we also talked about the shift that we have gone to purchasing more untreated water and maximizing the filtration plants. This is just the quick summary. You can see the 5.2% less in revenues, but then overall 11.5% less in total operating costs. In comparison, 6.6% less than when you compare last year, and then expenses were only 4.8% less than last year. So just as I show this, you can see this is really showing you water sales and then met purchases, both the blue bar and the blue line is prior year, and then the green is current year. You can see, and this is pretty common, we get into November, December, January, February, and water sales and purchases go down. But you can see for green, you can see that in January, February, March, significantly less than prior year, and that is because of the weather. We had just, certainly less sales, but less purchases as well. And really, from that aspect, you can just, that really does represent that 10,000 less acre feet. So getting off of water and turning over to wastewater, treatment flows were very similar to prior year. This year, 49.6 million gallons per day. Revenues on wastewater, a lot tighter. Revenues slightly above budget at 2.2%, mainly driven by the higher than anticipated growth. And then operating costs, 0.6% above budget, again, with the additional growth just slightly above budget, but very tight on both sides, both revenues and expenses. One of the things we've been communicating really for the last couple years is the increases that we've seen in various costs. You can see chemical costs, $1.8 million or 27% higher than budget. Energy costs, 1.6 or 18%, and then sludge hauling as well, 17% above budget. So certainly, we've been communicating these increases over the past 12 to 18 months, certainly shown here based on the year-end results. And then just quickly, you can see that 2.2%, very tight overall when we talk about revenues, and then operating costs just slightly above at 0.6%. In comparison to the prior year, it's 4.3% higher in revenue, which is closer to the growth that we've seen in the district for wastewater, and then expense is 11% higher, which is really driven by those three areas that I talked about earlier. Turning over to recycled water, a little over 29,000 acre feet sold. In comparison to last year, we actually had 39,000 acre feet sold. Certainly, again, impacted based on the high rainfall that we had earlier this year, 17% below budget. Revenues, though, overall, very close to budget, only 6% under. And then total operating costs were in line with budget. Again, energy costs higher than anticipated, and then under storage, one of the costs that we capture under storage and which has come up before is related to our discharge. So we did, unfortunately, have to discharge about 7,800 acre feet this year, and so that cost is captured under the storage category. So that's really driving why that cost is above budget. And then here's just the numbers, 5.9% under budget. As mentioned, very tight on operating costs, just 0.2% under. But you can certainly see in prior years, just 0.3% less in revenues from prior year, but expenses was almost 12% higher. And then quickly, reserves, this just shows you the reserves over the past five quarters. I really looked to June over June. You can see the increase from 687 to 714. As I mentioned earlier, we did have a net increase overall this year to reserves, and thus the increase. Connection fees, I did mention that we still see strong development activity and strong connections, and so we should certainly make sure we have inventory for meters. But here you see overall for sewer, 3% higher this past year, 71% above budget. For water, 11% less than we did last year, but certainly 33% higher than our average. And then my last slide, operating fixed assets. We've certainly talked about some of the supply chain impacts that we've seen, some of the cost increases. We revised this table to really show you not just the annual budget, the total spent to date, but the commitments that we have made to really show both the total commitments and spend that we have for the year. So you see the performance to the right. Just talking about commitments is things that we've ordered, purchase orders, and just have not paid for. You see on the vehicle side, 93% execution, IT 72%, for maintenance on operations at 78%. Other, which is a very small number, just wasn't, one of the projects just wasn't done. But overall, 93% or 95% on execution for OFA. And with that, I'm going to turn over to Linnea to cover CIP.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. And President Pauley, I am noting the time. I think we have the other board meeting that starts at 10.
We can delay it by a minute or two.
Okay, I'll be very concise here.
Concise, but,
all right.
But factual.
Very good. Our overall five-year CIP program targeted budget was about $690 million with an estimated external funding of $123 million. As we refined our CIP and really understood exactly what we'd be executing this year, we refined that to be targeted expenditures of $667. However, we still tracked against the $690 for the year-end reporting. The highest level of expenditures are in our water system investments. This slide shows the expenditures for fiscal year 2022-2023, again, 68% being on the water side, and the largest expenditures coming in the construction phase out of our 345 total projects underway and that $129 million. This shows our expenditures actual compared to budgeted for the fiscal year. You can see quarter one and quarter two, we were tracking very close to budgeted. However, quarter three and quarter four, we did start deviating. We had two large projects that we deferred in that quarter two, quarter three period, one being our San Jacinto groundwater treatment facility, in which bids came in higher than we anticipated. So we put a pause, we did some value engineering, and we've also since secured $3 million in ARPA funding for that project. We will be rebidding that this year. Also, the San Jacinto Regional Water Reclamation Facility, we deferred in order to prevent from competing against ourselves with other large programs that we were also bidding. So with those two projects, had we executed as planned, we would have been at about a 90% execution compared to our $129 million. However, with those deferrals, we were actually at 83% execution rate. This just demonstrates our top five expenditures totaling about $46 million. We completed 21 construction projects this fiscal year period. We also bid 18 new construction jobs. And as you can see on the far right hand of the slide, there's still a lot of market volatility in terms of our bid. We're plus some, minus some, but comprehensively, cumulatively, we were actually negative 4% compared to engineers' estimates for those 18 projects. We continue to advance programs in our strategic priorities. Was that fast enough, President Pauley?
That was pretty concise.
And this just provides the overall financial summary by service line. Again, the 83% water, we were at 91%, a slight variance based on that one large water project that we deferred. Wastewater was really the biggest change with the deferral of that wastewater project I mentioned. Recycled water coming in fairly close to budget. Major accomplishments, we continue to advance our key strategic priorities. I really just wanted to point out we've expedited several projects to accommodate the ARPA funding schedules, and we continue to meet or exceed milestones associated with those programs. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for either her or Mr. Adams?
I have one question for Mr. Adams. Just on the reserve slide, could you go back to that? So these amounts, connection fees, rate stabilization, debt service, those are the actual amounts that we have in those reserve funds?
Yeah, and they change, and you can see it fluctuates quite a bit. Part of it is when we're paying debt service, right? Debt service is every 6 months, so those, you'll see some fluctuations based on debt service. You also see projects. So some of the projects we're doing cash funding, so you'll see adjustments, especially on connection fees. You think, if you're saying $70,000, you're thinking that the line's this way. We are actually spending money both on debt service and capital, and so you see the variations.
So the question I have is, like, a request would be at some point in time in the future, could we take those different elements of our total reserves and line each one of those up against what our reserve policy is for some of those? I'd just like to see on those, how close are we in the middle of our reserve policy on those? Are we at the top? Are we below or whatever?
And I can, I certainly can do it, and probably even can do it as part of our year-end financial report presentation and stuff like that. So easily can do that.
Yep.
That'd be great.
That's it.
Perfect. Then I had one real quick, too, and it's more of a request, like Director Armstrong. Sometime in the future, with this changing interest rate environment, I would love to see current debt, what we're paying interest-wise, and then what we're now making on our I think that might be an interesting discussion, because as you we can note, within the last 18 to 24 months, the interest rate environment has greatly changed.
And great point, President Pauley. It has interest income. We didn't really talk about our variable rate. We have a certain amount of variable rate, so some of our interest expense has increased. President Pauley suggests we do an annual annual plan of finance, and we can sort of, certainly bring that
in January. Can we add that next time you're before the board? I just think that might be an interesting informational or discussion item on that. So,
sure will.
All right. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is 10:03, so we're going to call the meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority to order. And after that board meeting is over, we're going to take a 5 to 7 minute break. And I know that you are next on deck and want to get to you, but. So I am going to officially at 10:04 call the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority September 20th, 2023 meeting to order. May I get a roll call vote of the board members of the authority, please?
Yes. President Pauley?
Here.
Director Cronin?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And Director Record is absent. I believe he's the vice chair of the authority. April, do we have anybody wishing to make public comments for the financing authority?
No, we do not.
We do not. In that case, we'll move to item two, which is the approval of the minutes of the August 17th, 2022 regular meeting of the Financing Authority. So moved by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote on that, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. There are no action items. Item number four is to receive and file the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority fiscal year 2023 fourth quarter report. Can I get a motion on that? So motion. Moved by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote on that, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0. Director Record absent. The Financing Authority will stand adjourned until the next regular meeting.
24.
Okay. September 18th, 2024. With that, we will take a 5 to 7 minute break. Building.
I remember I went to a seminar, maybe it was Aqua or something, years and years ago. And the federal judge that had ruled shutting down the tunnels.
Bring our meeting back to order.
Said, under the Endangered Species Act.
And we will move on to item C, which is customer donations on help to other programs. Good morning.
Good morning, President.
Thank you for waiting and letting us do our break.
So, today, I am here to talk about customer donation options for the board. But before we do that, I want to provide some background on the Help to Others program. As you know, with the MWD, it was established in September of 2020. We initially launched the program with a pilot of seed money of $150,000 of non-rate revenue. It is administered by United Way. They help us with overseeing the application process and vetting the financial eligibility of the applicants. Eligible customers can receive up to $200 as a bill adjustment once every 12 months, so that's something they can apply for every year as long as they stay financially eligible. As of July 2023, 1,200 customers were assisted in approximately $191,000. And the reason why we're here today speaking about customer donations is because it was a request by Director Armstrong to explore the customer donation process for EMWD. So when we did our research, we wanted to understand what other agencies were doing with customer donations and what different types of customer donations were available to EMWD. And so what we found out was there's essentially three different types. There's a one-time donation, there's a recurring donation, and there's a roundup donation. And this donation process with customers is extremely common in the utility space from what we have found. So the first option, the one-time donation, that is an option that is actually available to EMWD customers now. They would go to the United Way website, they would click on the donate button, they would select EMWD Help to Others program as the program they were donating to, and at that time they would select a pledge of a one-time donation. The next type of donation is a recurring donation, so that is an ongoing elected donation that would be added to the customer's bill. They would make a payment against that donation at the time they're making their bill payment. But this option is currently not available to EMWD customers because it would require enabling within our current billing system. And then lastly, we have rounding up, and this is my favorite option just because it seems like it's a really easy choice to make. It's a very small donation, but it's something that many customers, you know, commonly want to participate in. So on this one, a customer has the option to round up their bill payment to the next whole dollar. And that donation is also made at the time the customer pays their monthly bill. And again, this is also not available for EMWD customers at this time because it does require enabling within our current system. But good news. So next step is that we will be implementing the recurring and rounding up donation process for our customers within our billing system, and that is slated to go live in October of this year. And we are also pursuing an option with our bill and payment vendor, Kubra, to offer a one-time donation option on the payment screen and during the payment process through our payment channels. That is anticipated to go live in March of 2024. And obviously, you know, when these options become available to our customers, we'll work with PGA to market the existing program and kind of let customers know how they can get involved. So we are very excited about this in the sense that, you know, we do feel like customers like the opportunity to get involved and help those that are less fortunate to them. And having the ability to have it more available and kind of front and center for our customers, I think will only help the program grow. And with that, I can answer any questions that you would like.
Questions, Director Armstrong?
Well, no, I really appreciate it. And I think that this is a real issue in Southern California for very, for many different water agencies, and finding with the restrictions with Prop 218 really limits our abilities to do things. So finding creative solutions and programs like this and building off of what we've already done, I think it sets an example and a model for other agencies that haven't quite figured out ways to do something. So I just appreciate that we're doing it and we're continually being creative and looking at new ways. So thank you.
I would agree. And you see it at the supermarket all the time. You can round up or you can donate. But I have a question about the round up. That sounds great, but can you round up to the next nickel?
So what you would be doing is rounding up to the next whole dollar. So if your bill was $75.50, you would be donating 50 cents. little too steep, I don't know. But I mean,
the next dollar is fine.
No, I just wanted to say thank you again. This is important. It is important that we find the Help to Others program and all the funding that we can. It's not only important to actually helping our customers who do struggle with the bills, but in the general scheme of things you probably hear at Met and throughout the water community, that these are important to people that provide water and in the general water community. I these are much better programs than we ever get to lowering the price of water or something. I think water is a valuable commodity that we all have to pay for, and I take that very seriously as how we pay for the infrastructure and the delivery of safe, clean water to everyone. So I'd rather do these programs than be mandated to do some sort of pricing structures. So my one question, and maybe it's probably to April, and forgive me, I think every year, isn't there a day of giving that's something on the calendars or that might be interesting to promote this? Because as we make it easier, I am a lazy person, so the easier you make it for me to donate $5 or something, which I would be more than happy to do, the better. So I think there's always a day of giving in our society or something that
I believe it's in the month of November.
Yeah, Aaron and I have talked about it.
Okay, perfect. If we could promote that, and then will it be available by then to...
The system-based one for the rounding up and the one-time donation, the recurring donations for EMWD customers within our billing system will be available by then.
Okay. Yep. Anyway, excellent. Thank you again. Appreciate the presentation today. All right. Informational item D is the Murrieta Northern Keyhole Water and Sewer Study Update. Good morning, Mr. Wallace.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Happy to be here this morning to talk about the Murrieta North Key Infrastructure Planning Study Update. So the agenda today, I'll be providing the board relevant background on the area noted as the Murrieta North Key, as well as the ongoing efforts of staff as it relates to the infrastructure planning study to provide water and sewer service to this area, including our coordination that we've been having with the City of Murrieta staff. And then lastly, next steps and desired decisions that are necessary to prepare a roadmap for ongoing development in this area. This slide identifies the Murrieta North Key and its proximity to existing development and infrastructure, and this area comprises about 300 acres. This area is currently a rural island with dirt roads over natural terrain without any water or sewer infrastructure to support the proposed development densities. Also of note, most of this area is not annexed into EMWD nor MWD service territory and involves significant property ownership variability. In 2019, the city updated its land use designation over this area, whereby it changed from a rural residential zoning to a mix of high density and medium density residential uses. This land use change did not specifically address a plan for water and sewer infrastructure and service to this area. It has been estimated this area would generate several thousand dwelling units. As identified in prior slides, significant infrastructure is needed for development under the current land use designations. And with this area being outside of EMWD's retail service area, water and sewer demands and flows were not accounted for in prior master planning activities. thus required water and sewer facilities were not programmed into Eastern's CIP. Due to the rural and rugged terrain that exists, roadway and drainage improvements are needed to provide adequate right-of-way profile grades and surface protection for such regional water and sewer facilities. In addition, annexation to EMWD and MWD is needed at additional cost to landowners and developers. With such regional facilities not accounted for in EMWD's CIP planning and rate determinations, an infrastructure funding strategy will be required that would be in addition to EMWD's general district and treatment financial participation charges. The challenges of the Murrieta North Key became evident through significant developer applications and inquiries for water and sewer service. It was soon evident that both the city and EMWD needed to closely coordinate and develop a plan to resolve such development challenges. In November of 2022, the city hosted a community meeting that identified the challenges of this area and presented a timeline for further study and resolution. Separately, EMWD formed an internal task force comprising senior executive management, our facilities planning department, development services, and public and governmental affairs staff. In early 2023, staff initiated its infrastructure planning studies. First, staff defined a high-level facilities plan that was further expanded and refined through a consultant effort. EMWD's consultant then took a deeper dive to define required roadway, drainage, water, and sewer facilities, including preparing an opinion of required implementation costs. Ongoing coordination with the city is occurring with a workshop that happened last week and with additional meetings to follow. These next two slides depict the significant development interest in this area. Although several of these project applications have expired or been abandoned due to other market conditions, this reprieve has given staff and the city time to further develop its required infrastructure strategy. This slide identifies the proposed backbone roadway grid to provide adequate corridor for required water and sewer conveyance pipelines. The key assumptions that were made as part of this was that to put the water and sewer facilities in, full roadway width would not be required. So the interim roadway width per the city standard 113 would be used. However, ultimate profile grades would be established to accommodate drainage and meet the city's site distance requirements. This slide also identifies areas of potential deferral whereby it might be more cost effective to have developers construct those segments in yellow since gravity sewers are not initially required in these areas. This slide identifies the proposed backbone water pipeline grid that would convey water from the district's existing 1698 pressure zone that would provide sufficient capacity for high-density residential development. The water demands from this area would also require corresponding additional storage volumes. And as indicated in the previous roadway grid slide, corresponding water infrastructure deferrals are being further evaluated. This slide depicts the proposed backbone sewer conveyance facilities that would be comprising gravity sewer pipelines that would converge at the southeast corner of the Murrieta North Key area to a regional sewer lift station. On an interim basis, a proposed sewer force main would connect to the existing gravity sewer in Whitewood Road, which would convey those flows to the existing Temecula Regional Water Reclamation Facility. The good news with this interim condition is that staff has quantified that available remaining capacity in the existing sewer conveyance system and the treatment plant exist. Through staff's recent field flow monitoring efforts, the existing sewer conveyance and Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility has capacity for approximately 2,000 EDUs. Ultimately, staff anticipates that build-out sewer flows from this area would require extension of the sewer force main approximately 3 miles to a new point of connection at an existing gravity sewer in, at Hahn Road and Ziders, which would convey those flows to the Paris Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility. In addition, this ultimate infrastructure improvement could allow EMWD to abandon the existing Baxter lift station that is kind of on the north end of the Murrieta North Key, as well as divert flows from the area depicted in blue on this exhibit, approximately 500 acres, and relieve potential future capacity constraints at the Temecula Valley plant. So next steps, ongoing evaluation and discussions are occurring with the goal of making key decisions related to infrastructure needs and implementation strategies for the Murrieta North Key area. Additional outreach meetings will occur with a schedule yet to be determined to update all stakeholders, such as property owners, developers, real estate professionals, and other interested parties. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions on this?
No, that's good.
No, I appreciate the effort. I know Councilman Holliday from the city of Murrieta is very interested in this. You know, it is the question of, do we do infrastructure before development, or are we development-driven? I kind of think for our existing ratepayers, we need to be development-driven. But obviously, this is an area that is going to have homes and businesses in it someday in the future. It's just predicting when that time comes. And as I have always told Councilman Holliday and others in Murrieta, we are here to serve when the time comes. So appreciate it very much. I know that you're interacting with all the folks at Murrieta and do a great job with that. So
thank you.
Any other questions? Or
President Pauly, I would just offer there are developers that have been able to advance their development in this area, and we are working closely with them through the process of annexation, so especially those that are directly adjacent to our existing infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to accommodate it, work with developers as their applications are coming to fruition.
Yeah, that's a good point, Linnea. Thank you. Yeah, there are the development areas that are along the fringe, Whitewood Road, Clinton Keith, those do have a bit of an advantage to, mm-hmm. you know, developing sooner than some of the core areas.
Let me ask you, and maybe Director Corona, who also sits on LAFCO, is this something that we should annex as a whole, or we should annex piecemeal as development occurs? Or
so the challenge with that is that many of the developments haven't been defined enough to meet the annexation applications requirements for metropolitan. So a metropolitan application has to include the anticipated demands both on the water and sewer side. And right now, many of these pending developments haven't gone through that process of defining those. And as Corey mentioned, some of them that had gone through that process have stalled now and aren't ready to go through the annexation process. So, you know, I think that patchwork of figure that Corey showed, I think, really demonstrates the variation in one owner's variation in potential density, variation in potential timelines, and all of those things make it very challenging for us to annex that area as a whole. And we're still open to that if the developers can come together and we can have a good understanding of the implementation plan and the projected demands. But right now, we definitely don't want to hold up developers that are ready to go through the process, because that could delay their ability to advance their project. So again, we're open to working with developers as they come together as either individual or as groups, and we'll continue to look for opportunities to make that process as efficient as possible.
Are we getting any calls from folks who are upset because, you know, they were all for it and everything else, and then, you know, you talk about the contracts, because once the economy kind of stalled out a little bit, the developers bailed out, and now they lost their opportunity, and, you know.
I think because of the climate, a lot of the developers that we heard from in that initial meeting have put their plans on hold. As I mentioned, we are working specifically with one developer that was at that meeting, that their project is advancing, and they are working through the process of annexation and working with the city through the entitlement process. There's really one main, I don't even know if I'd call him a developer, but what one main community interest that we still engage with regularly. In fact, he attended our committee meeting on Thursday to listen in on the updates to this, and we are continuing to provide him updates to and help him navigate how to advise potential property owners in that area. So I wouldn't say angry. We still do have some interest, and maybe there's been some frustration and just the time it's, you know, taken for both the city and us to get to this point. But I think there's a general consensus of appreciation for us continuing to advance this at this point.
I would add, as Linnea said, I don't think it's so much as frustration, but maybe sometimes a little bit of confusion on the process when we talk about, you know, can we annex the entire area all at once? Well, that's going to take a lot of property owner and developer coordination to bring an application together, and how does that get paid for? That significant cost to annex that entire area. And so it's not just a matter of timing of the, you know, developer projects, which, as Corey points out, it's not just water and sewer we're talking about. It's roads, it's storm drain. There's a lot that needs to come together, and it's just understanding the process and the magnitude of what needs to happen, and how that ultimately ends up getting paid for. I think there's some, you know, a little bit of confusion. You know, Linnea points out it's not necessarily a developer; it's more of a realtor in the area that's just looking for opportunities and is just struggling to grasp the magnitude and the process to make this happen.
Well, I remember at one of the meetings that I attended, folks were kind of push. How do we get this done faster? How do we get this done faster? Because, you know, they were under contract. They wanted to get their money. And then some of these things just completely fell apart. And, you know, I can understand that. Disappointment for some of these folks. But.
Right. Again, I think it's part of our job of educating everybody. I mean, it sounds very simple, annex in Demet and Eastern, but it is not. And as we learned with the Los Alamos project, I mean, it had the city of Marietta not stepped up with ARPA funding to do the annexation of that, I'm not sure we'd be along as we have. And so, you know, again, there's many options for the city if they want to do so, but I think it's not clear to some people what the annexation project entails and the expense of that. So good job by our team, though, and I always get good feedback from the city of Marietta folks that we are doing a good job of continuing to educate them on that. So thank you very much.
Sure,
thank you, Corey.
Yep.
All right. We will go on to item 6 on our agenda this morning, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do
second.
So. Second by Director Corona. Get a roll call vote on that, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. That will take us on to our calendar this morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This morning, we have a couple of events for your review and consideration. Beginning with Saturday, October 7th, we have the State of the Black IE Symposium, Office of Assembly Member Dr. Corey Jackson in Moreno Valley. On Wednesday, October 11th, is the Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District Regional Reclamation Facility Expansion Groundbreaking Ceremony in Lake Elsinore. On Thursday, October 12th, there are two events listed. We have the San Jacinto State of the City in San Jacinto, and we also have the Temecula Valley Chamber Legislative Summit in Temecula. On Thursday, October 26th, is the City of Canyon Lake 2023 State of the City in Canyon Lake. And on Sunday, November 5th through Wednesday, November 7th, is the Water Reuse California Conference in Indian Wells. Just want to point out that we do have the flyers for these events located at the back of your packets. On page 2, you will find the Boardmaster calendar for the next 2 weeks. If you would please take a moment to review this and let me know of any changes or updates, please. On page 3, we have the upcoming and future schedule of events. Starting with Wednesday the 27th, we have EMWD State of the District at Trumbull Pond. Thursday, October 5th, is the French Valley Recycled Water Pipeline Phase 2 Project Completion Ceremony in Winchester. On Wednesday, October 18th, is Supervisor Chuck Washington State of the District Address in Temecula. On Wednesday, October 19th, is the City of Menifee 15th Birthday and State of the City Address in Menifee. Wednesday, October 25th through Thursday, October 26th, we have the Building Industry Association and Building Industry Show 2023 in San Diego. Sunday, November 12th through Tuesday, November 14th are the D.C. legislative meetings in Washington, D.C., and Tuesday, November 28th through Thursday, November 30th is the Association of California Agency Aqua Fall Conference and Expo in Indian Wells. Following are the board meeting dates for the next three months, which are all on schedule. On page 4 are the upcoming board committee meetings and joint interagency meetings, also all on schedule. Please note that we have one board member that will be out of the area beginning tomorrow, Thursday, September 21st, through Saturday, October 22nd. And lastly is the district office holiday schedule. November 10th, Veterans Day, EMWD offices will be closed. And November 23rd through the 24th is Thanksgiving. Again, EMWD offices will be closed. Are there any questions or updates from the board?
See none. Thank you. Excellent job. Appreciate it very much. We will go on to board members' attendance reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Yes, starting with the Metropolitan meetings, and just to kind of add on to what was presented earlier, a little bit on the Camp for Water process. You know, that process is looking at future demands for Metropolitan Service Area, and it has different climate scenarios. And one of the, I guess, the most challenging scenario would be, you know, really high demand and really low supply. In that scenario, there's like about a 600,000 acre foot shortfall of water supply that Metropolitan has. So the question is, you know, how does Metropolitan plan for that? And should it provide that level of assurance in that worst-case scenario? And what does that look like? And if you did do that, would those facilities that you would need to create be used? Would they be rarely used? Would they be stranded? You know, it's all those decisions are being talked about. And then, of course, it's who pays for it if you do that. And at Eastern, our supply needs into the future will double what they are today, roughly. And half of that need in the future will come from Metropolitan. So this is important to us, and I think that's to Director President Pauly's point earlier about our regional effort with the other agencies. I think is really important because who knows what the future is going to hold for us with Metropolitan in our future needs. And this Camp for Water process then integrates with the long-range financial plan at Metropolitan, and so we've had meetings here with our staff and with Metropolitan staff to provide input to the long-range financial plan. There's going to be a memo produced by our staff to Metropolitan on our input formally. And so just a lot going on with all of that, and that's what a lot of the meetings and focus has been on. The desalination resource management strategy, I didn't attend that workshop. The City of Menifee Council meeting was really good. Our general manager gave a sort of an annual update. I thought it was really well received. The Joint Inland Orange County Caucus talks about some of those things I just mentioned. I think the good development there is that we're having these after meetings without Met staff and just with the member agencies and talking more about priorities and how we align together on things and how we can support each other. So that's progress. I already talked about the long-range financial plan. the Western Science Center Under the Stars event. Attended that, was sort of the I don't know everybody, but sort of the who's who of San Jacinto and Hemet that were there, and it was an interesting evening and a good event to support a good cause. And the other two meetings, I did not make those other two meetings.
That's very good. Thank you so much, Director Corona.
Okay, well, Jeff covered the Western Science Center Science on the Star event. Ranch California Water District board meeting, I gave a short report to them, and then they went into closed session to discuss employee issues. Little note, Jake Wiley, who is their assistant manager for engineering, has been hired now as the general manager of the Rainbow Water District, so we may be seeing more of Jake here in the future. And that's all I have.
All right. Very good. I attended the kicked off the Water Leaders Academy, and I just wanted to say a great program I do. Cannot say enough good stuff about Amanda Fine from April's operation that puts that together. We had a good group, and I want to always continue to do that because I think there's a great benefit to the district sharing what we do with other elected leaders. We had some school board members here, a lot of legislative staffers, and it's just a really good day to educate people on what we do at Eastern. Was unable to attend the Western Science Center and the IE Works retreat. WRCOG meeting was standard agenda items on that. The general manager, I had a meeting with the Nuevo Water Company general manager and one of their board meetings to talk about some historic well agreements that they wanted to bring to our attention. So I think Joe and staff are looking into those. And anyway, it was a really good discussion. They are we do provide water to them. I actually suggested to look in if we could get an ad hoc committee maybe twice a year going with them, simply because I think we do, as growth continues out there, we're going to find some issues that we have in common and want to keep in contact with the Nuevo Mutual Water Company. Good meeting with our general manager. We had the Army Corps engineers, Colonel Baker, who is the new colonel out here. We had him here. Again, kudos to staff on putting these events together. And that one kind of happened, I think, pretty quickly, but it was a good event, and I was not able to go out to the DeSalter tour, but that was good, and they're very appreciative, everybody from the Army Corps. I attended a lunch. We did a lunch for our employees that put together when the Secretary of the Interior was here again. I think we had, 5 days' notice or something, and we pulled that off brilliantly. And so we had kind of an appreciation lunch, and that was, Laura, I think that was really good. I always liked it. We have exceptional people here at the district, and when they do exceptional things, I always want to recognize that. Was unable to attend this month's Winchester MAC, but on the Riverside County Water Task Force, that was last Friday. One of our speakers was Linnea. She did an outstanding job. And then two other people that I have the opportunity to work with in my career job, which is Ms. Oldenbach from the County of Riverside, who talked about a lot of ARPA funding, and then Chris Gray from WRCOG about where we are in this area as far as long-term planning. Again, we are the fastest-growing area in California, and it was a really good discussion about what we're doing water-wise, and even one of the participants, I think, asked you a question about the local water agencies getting together and coming up with new ideas for local supplies. You answered it brilliantly. So there you go. With that, Director Slauson.
Yes, I had a meeting with Laura and John regarding the some of the details of the Marina Valley Utilities Tax that we pay to the city. We tax our ratepayers. Did not attend the Hispanic Chamber meeting. Did not attend the appreciation lunch. Attended a meeting with the general manager. Just went over all different things coming up on the agenda, a little more detail. And on SAPA, we had a presentation on the weather modification pilot program, and also just sort of a legislative update from our consultants. And I did attend the task force on September 14th, and so I heard Lene and I know Chris Cray a little bit. So I think, yeah, she did very well. If I could...
That's a little lower than how he portrayed it. I think two different...
a little nervous who's going to go next. I keep kind of declining in the...
You were fantastic.
Okay. It's spectacular. We're back on track.
I just couldn't even find the words to say it just now. That's what finally came to me. But I did not get invitations to the task force. So two times ago, I went to my son's phone, or his computer, emailed me his invitation. This last time, I logged on to Western, and I found it on their site. Logged on. So if I could get that.
Let's make sure that Director Slauson is getting those invitations, because the task force, I'm so glad we participate in that, because it's fun when it's all online, but you can watch the number of people on it. And we do get a lot of community leaders who you would not think would be on those calls. But, again, it is just educating people on what's going on here in the water community. And it's fun to see who are actually on those calls. We had the chief executive officer for Riverside County was on the last one, and I got a lot of good feedback from him afterwards about he learned things, and that's kind of what those are for. So.
Very good.
Anything else?
That was okay.
Director's comments, future agenda items.
I had one comment, and I guess you got a copy, and Joe Mawad got a copy. But it's from Dick Heil. He used to be our community development director here back in a long time ago. But he attended the Water Leaders Academy, and he was just very complimentary of all the staff. Mm-hmm. He said he was surprised at how good the technical staff was at speaking, at public speaking. He was just really impressed. And he highlighted Alma Ramirez and Amanda Fine for their work. He thought they were very well versed in all the aspects of the district.
Could not agree more. So, all right. If there's no other director's comments, future agenda items, I will ask our legal counsel if there's a need for closed session.
We've got two closed session items this morning.
Very good. So let's take a moment to switch over to closed session. Okay, we are back in open session. Can I ask our legal counsel to report out of closed session, please?
Certainly, Mr. President. The board met in closed session to discuss the item identified as a threat to public facilities. The board received a report from the Senior Director of Information Systems. No reportable action took place. The board also met in closed session for unidentified litigation. It's one case. The board received a report from district counsel. Again, no reportable action took place. Mr. President, that concludes the report.
Thank you for that. And with that, we will stand adjourned until Wednesday, October 4th, 2023 at 9 a.m.